dollars an opportunity? Have growth prospects from the US reduced? Have growth prospects from India increased? Which are the top sell-side ideas in the pharmaceutical and healthcare space currently? What are the trends these experts are predicting in the pharmaceutical and healthcare space? Tune in to the third series of The Medicine Box, where I, Ekta Batra, talk to the top six sell-side analysts covering the Indian pharma and healthcare space and drill down to all of their ideas on trends and stocks.
Our guest on today's podcast is Anmol Ganju, Director, JM Financial Institutional Securities. Anmol has over 13 years of equity research experience covering healthcare. Prior to JM Financial, Anmol worked with Kotak Securities, BNP Paribas and Morgan Stanley. Hi Anmol, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me and such a generous introduction.
Anmol, let's start with the fact that you have 13 years of experience. So based on this 13 years of research that you've seen in the pharmaceutical and healthcare space, where exactly are we in the cycle?
So basically, you know, we are at somewhere near the trough. It's been a long period of challenging times that industry is coming out of. And now the road to recovery will be uneven. It was no one's case that, you know, we'll be off to the races once again. The industry relative to the previous cycle has also become bigger. The challenges are different. And the earning streams are fairly diversified. Unlike a lot of previous cycles, this time we have seen most factors turning adverse at the same time. One of the biggest advantages of Indian healthcare or pharma industry has been that the demand has been relatively stable and the earning streams have been fairly diversified. They've come from the US, they've come from rest of the world markets, and they've come from India, not necessarily in that order. Where we are in terms of industry cycle is that US clearly, there seems to be no light at the end of the tunnel. Pricing still continues to be a challenge. India, you know, we've seen some kind of a slowdown, which inherently might not be a volume slowdown, but in terms of realization, competitive intensity, regulatory gaze have ensured that the pharma growth rates do drop from their historical levels. So we've seen some kind of an erosion or at least softening of growth, if you may like. And then you have had GST and Demon, they had their own set of challenges. We also see structurally, especially on the acute side, infections become less of a problem. So, you know, acute sales particularly are off their previous highs.
Lesser.
So to that extent, that's another factor. And rest of the world, you know, it's been hard to make money. These have been investment markets. There's no real game in town which has scaled up except for probably in Ajanta Pharma, which has done well in some of these peripheral markets. So net-net, the situation as it stands today is that these are challenging times. The only saving grace from a market standpoint could be that, you know, a lot of these operating metrics are beginning to show signs of trough. While it might be very early to call a trough, but you're at least seeing that the pace of erosion has come off.
Pace of erosion in earnings?
In earnings.
But what are these earnings being supported by? Because you just mentioned that US is probably seeing price pressure, which is quite intense. So where is this earning support coming from for these companies from?
So just to try to understand this with the help of numbers. So for example, if you look at the quarter that went by, you know, we saw, despite all the negativity around, across the Indian pharma space, except for probably Lupin and Dr. Reddy's, every other company on a year-on-year basis did record growth. And this record was a dollar number, right? So it's not that they benefited particularly from depreciation or anything. So which basically tells us that, you know, the last year around Q3, Q4, we did see some kind of a final trough. The only thing is that margins haven't been supported despite a stabilization of the US trajectory, if you will. Although I will caveat this by saying that it's just one quarter and, you know, we should be careful before we extrapolate this as a long-term trend or anything. But it's obviously a data point that we should be paying enough attention to. There have been no big product launches which support earnings or the US trajectory. What might have happened, in my view, is that a lot of Indian companies have started pumping in more volumes despite lower price realizations. And why they've been able to do that is because currency has turned supportive. and they are already having, you know, fairly evolved cost structures as far as the US is concerned. So on a variable cost standpoint, they stand to benefit even if they sell at lower realizations. Again, it's early yet, but the last quarter did signal that that well might be the case, that, you know, given the cost structures which are elevated, they're selling and probably not going down aggressively the way Teva's and Mylan's are going, where they've kind of taken a call that this far and no further, not taking any price hikes. Maybe incremental contracts are not coming at the same price realizations. All that remains to be seen, but just first some general signs of a hint that things might be changing or at least stop deteriorating.
Okay. That point on price pressure, the thing is that we've heard different views from different companies. For example, Lupin says that, you know, price pressure is not that much. Cadila has said that sequentially the price pressure was quite stable. And we've heard other companies such as Aurobindo echo the same statement or sentiment. So where exactly are we when it does come to price pressure in the US? You've spoken to a lot of companies, you've spoken to industry watchers. Is it going to get worse, especially going into the presidential election?
So, just to first to take the presidential election out, because I think that's a non-factor. You know, obviously that contributes a lot to the news flow, but I think the realization as far as the US policymaking circles is clear at this point of time that generics are a part of the solution. They're not a part of the problem when it comes to earned drug inflation in the US. 8% of cost, 19% of volumes. So they do contribute to solving some of the problems as opposed to adding to them. So I think let's get that out of the way first. Coming back to your first question, which was essentially that, you know, where we are in the generic price life cycle, I think we need to understand what the longer term trends with respect to pricing erosion are. And why we called the top of the sector was because we thought that that was a factor which was getting ignored completely in 2014-15, which was also around the time that a lot of these stock prices peaked. So last 15 years data on pricing erosion is that the median pricing erosion in dollar terms, and this is pre-2015 data, has been around 7%. Now 7% median means that you would have an interval of 5 to 9%, and these are dollar numbers. Now, whenever you have had 5 to 9% interval, during a 9% period, you also saw currency depreciation, currency appreciation. So you had a further hit of 3-4%. And when you had the 5% regime, you also had a currency depreciation of 3-4%. So an interval which was like 5 to 9% from an Indian company top line standpoint started looking more like 2 to 13%. Right. And the range was never so wide. It still isn't so wide. So I think, you know, it's easy to become very negative on pricing at the bottom of the cycle, but I think it will mean revert. We've seen the impact of customer consolidation in the US clearly behind us. We are seeing initial signs of supply shocks in key products like Valsartan. We are also hearing signs of customer behavior change where they're not trying to pinch the last penny out of a manufacturer, but you know, willing to pay slightly higher if they are guaranteed of you know, more stabler supplies, higher quality, and no quality-related disruptions. So my sense is that if you look at lead indicators and how market has been extrapolating the past trends of pricing erosion, we could be somewhere around the trough. Now, it could, it's anyone's guess whether that's next quarter or the year after that, but I think we're close to the trough.
Okay. So which company, which Indian company is probably most susceptible to in, to US pricing pressure, and which company probably isn't?
So basically, see, the companies in India have realized that their US forays from here on will have to be different. I think to that extent, there has been a change of strategy. There has been tactical shifts in what they seek to achieve in the US market in terms of end objectives. And the purely from a market standpoint, I think it's very easy to figure out how people are exposed. I mean, someone like Aurobindo sells majority into US, massive exposure. Dr. Reddy's only 13-14% India exposure, rest some Russian branded market, another 13-14%. Majority reliance on the US, massive exposure to pricing erosion. In case of Sun, from a top line standpoint, you could argue that they're also reasonably exposed, but you know, at this point of time, given the investment cycle they are in, they're anyways incurring losses.
In terms of product portfolio, which one do you think probably has more susceptibility based on just the fact that there are many other generic companies probably vying for the same products that they have?
So basically, see, I think Aurobindo is fairly susceptible to pricing erosion. Lupin, in the absence of launches, given that the base portfolio, that's also assuming there's no disruption to the regular supplies as a consequence of the regulatory events which have happened at four of their plants, should be reasonably susceptible to base erosion earnings. Sun has a particular product, Absorica, where you know they could see meaningful pressure. But the trick in the industry always has been that you know as you have a seasoning-based business portfolio, you have a very aggressive product launch calendar on the top of that. Mm-hmm. And I think how the U.S. top lines or U.S. performance of a lot of Indian companies will pan out is essentially a function of how quickly they're able to bring new products to the market and how quickly they're able to scale it. That's where, you know, the successes or failures will lie. So for example, if you look at Dr. Reddy's, why it's done well without meaningful earning support yet is because people believe that, you know, they have these three key assets over the next 12 to 18 months, which they will be able to monetize. It's not a call on their base portfolio, where the erosion will be pretty much what happens with the rest of the market or industry. But there will be incremental top-up products, which will make the top line look much healthier. So that's how the business has always been. It's, again, 15 to 18 was a period where you also saw product launch calendar dry up. And therefore, it was a perfect trinity of factors which led to we seeing the massive compression in U.S. top lines that we did.
Okay. What about companies which are more Indian focused, say the Alchems of the world, Eris Life Sciences? Would you be a buyer in any of those? And do you like of the fact that those companies have only an Indian focus?
So they've clearly benefited from an Indian focus at this point in time. I think, you know, you just have to look at stock price performances to figure out that India has been a more stable market. But again, if you take a longer term view, both forward and backward, you'll figure out that US is a fairly large market. It's not an opportunity which can be ignored.
Ignored, yeah.
And also, Indian companies have significantly invested and scaled up their game in the US. Yes, they're going through a bad life cycle in the time of the industry for 3-4 years. It's a very different return profile market. So, for example, the ROCs of US businesses are materially different from what India does. India has lower growth. But when you get that growth cycle coming in the US, and what makes the Indian pharma model so interesting from a long-term standpoint is that you have this cash engine in the form of domestic formulations, which will never grow as exciting as 15-16%, but it will throw a lot of cash, which then you'll be able to deploy from an investment standpoint to other markets. And here, Indian companies will be able to do what some of their larger peers won't, right? So, for example, Teva's and Mylan's of the world, I have diets, and I think, you know, as they kind of don't vacate the market during these tough cycles, there is money to be made when the upcycle returns.
This, the fact that a lot of generic drugs are now being sold through Jan Aushadhi in India, do you think that that's enough of a disruption for bigger companies, say Indian companies such as Cipla, Alchem and the rest who are selling drugs in India? Do you think that their portfolio can get affected eventually because of it?
So there'll be some impact
or
for
growth
sure.
to get affected.
So there will be some impact for sure. It does add another variable into the market. You could argue that numbers at this point of time are fairly small, but Jan Aushadhi will do to an Indian formulation market what largely generics used to do to innovators in the US. So assuming in next fiscal they do around 1200 crore, incrementally they could take away 6000 crores worth of sales which would have been added to the 130,000 crore odd Indian domestic formulation market.
So it is a visible threat. It is a threat for the market.
So it is a factor which you have to watch out for, but you have to also bear in mind that at the penetration levels that we are at this point of time, they could also be additive, right? So there is a large section of patient population at the bottom of the pyramid, which otherwise would not have been able to access modern medicine. So penetration in India also slowed down as a consequence of lack of affordability. It could very well be addressing that part of the equation. It will have an impact, I have no doubt on that. But I think just to do simple maths and kind of take out whatever Jan Aushadhi is taking, is stealing from the Indian pharma opportunity set, I think that's slightly oversimplistic.
Okay. You've got coverage on a couple of stocks, Sun Pharma, Ipca, Torrent Pharma, Dr. Reddy's. I wanted to specifically ask you about Ipca because it's been a fantastic year of returns for Ipca. But they still have three plants which are under the US FDA scanner. They've got back into the malarial market, the tender market. But what is the story for Ipca?
So I think what Ipca has done extremely well is that they have been able to de-risk their overall business performance from the US. And I think what Ipca has done is seriously remarkable because one is that they had this cost structure which was elevated trying to address the US market. And as we've seen happens with a lot of companies, US FDA did come and think that their plants were not up there, there were huge remediation costs, so on and so forth. But as the company was going through these regulatory challenges, and also courtesy the fact that they didn't have a very large US base, they focused on what they did well, which was one, costs, so they were able to have massive re-engineering when it came to their costs. And second was their focus on their core Indian market, mm-hmm. where they've been able to evolve portfolio to ensure that going forward, you'll have 13-14% growth, mm-hmm. whether or not US is able to resolve itself. By 13-14%, I meant 13-14% earnings growth, mm-hmm. which is not bad in these uncertain times. So for example, if you have a company growing at 14%, trading at 18-19 times, mm-hmm. with the optionality of US coming back to compliance at some point of time, I think that is a fairly strong investment case. And what we've seen in terms of the stock price performance in recent times is market recognizing that fact.
Mm. Okay. You spoke about the fact that Ipca has tried to de-risk itself when it comes to the US business, and they have three plants which are under the regulatory scanner. Do you think that Lupin has to probably go down that road where they need to de-risk themselves, and maybe the regulatory or remediation is probably going to take a little longer than what was anticipated? As of now, we're having this conversation and they have an OAI on two of their plants, Mandi Deep as well as on another plant, which the Somerset plant, which they just received, plus they have two warning letters. This is the current status, but do you think that they need to de-risk themselves? We don't know what's going to happen in the future, just based on the current scenario.
So the short answer to your question is that they can't de-risk themselves like Ipca, and that is courtesy of the fact that they have a strong US business, mm-hmm. where the legacy is also a meaningful number. Why Ipca was able to do what they did was because the US was still emerging as a business. Mm-hmm. There were just costs. While as in the case of Lupin, you already have, even after massive erosion, close to a $900 million top line in the US. Mm-hmm. And to service this $900 million odd top line in the US, you have a manufacturing infrastructure, 90% of which is now under one kind of regulatory scanner or the mm-hmm. other. As you said, that the company has received two OAIs in the last 4 or 5 days. This doesn't happen very often. Mm-hmm. This is not a usual phenomena. Mm-hmm. I think it will take a lot of energies on the part of the company management to fix that. And until that happened, the US recovery, which I was talking about for the whole sector, is not clearly going to happen. In terms of timelines, whenever there have been such precedents in the industry, and they're not very many. For example, Dr. Reddy's did have something like this some time back. Ipca did some time like back. The road to clear resolution is at least 12 to 18 months if you go by the past precedents. So the only saving grace is that the stock at this point is pricing in a lot of other businesses, but US recovery is something now. Which
do you think that the two plants with warning letters their remediation might get pushed because of these issues and could be a company-wide problem?
See, but with certainty we don't know, but if you look at any company which undergoes a problem at four plants simultaneously, I think it's fair on the part of investors to assume that there is something with the compliance architecture which needs a much closer look, and in terms of the fixes, they will again have to be structural in nature. Now, if you look at Somerset, the last plant which got an OAI versus Pithampur, now they manufacture very different product baskets, right? Mm-hmm. So you have Pithampur which does cephalosporins, you have Somerset mm-hmm. which primarily deals with derma products, mm-hmm. women health products. The standards are very different. Mm-hmm. So the fact that both of them, within a very short span, do come under some kind of an FDA scanner, you know, probably tells us that the company needs to take a very, very hard look at some of its very basic procedures and quality framework. So,
What about Sun Pharma? You have a top, it's one of your top buys. Are you worried about all what's taken place in the whistleblower angle? Do you think that maybe that could just be a temporary phase?
So, you know, a lot of these things which outside of the business have happened, you know, obviously do create some kind of an uncertainty. But we have to remember in the case of Sun Pharma that it has an asset which is 9% Indian pharma market share. It's a very hard to replicate asset. Mm. It's a hugely profitable business. It's something which has huge barriers to entry. It's also something which is throwing up on cash. Mm. And from a capital allocation standpoint, the management has always made the right moves. Whilst markets do what they do, we have to also bear in mind that Sun Pharma management was the only management which very well ahead of the time realized that the generic cycle in the US is about to turn south and therefore started making these specialty investments. Those specialty investments have run their course. It's a very different business relative to what the generic pharma is, but the company has made massive strides. So, you know, from that standpoint, today, you know, you have a situation where Sun is losing money in the US market. While if you expense all the investments that have been making, this is clearly for their non-taro business. And once a lot of these things start turning around, and we're seeing early signs of that, I think earnings recovery is something which we are fairly confident of and are sticking our neck out.
So it doesn't matter, Aditya MediSales.
See, those questions the management will have to address, otherwise the multiples will suffer. There's clearly no question on that. So, for example, if you look at the quarter that went by, it was a stellar quarter on most counts, but market didn't give benefit of doubt. With respect to you know, some of the issues that have been raised, you know, whether it's Aditya MediSales or things around their tax structures, etc., I think company will have to fix those if it desires a much higher multiple or the multiple that they themselves have benefited from over the years. So I think, you know, given that they, Mr. Sanghvi also owns 58%, I think it's in his interest, and he's too smart an entrepreneur not to realize that. I don't know the exact roadmap of how a lot of this overhang gets lifted, but I think company will have to make certain choices in the days to come.
From the broader stocks within the mid caps, the Ipcas of the world, Ajanta Pharma, Strides, which one stands out to you?
So Ipca stands out. Now, obviously, the only problem there is that a lot of good run is behind them. The stock has rallied around 50% in the past 4 months. Torrent Pharma stands out. That's a name we haven't talked about. But again, you know, that's a company which has clearly shifted gears in last 12 to 18 months or more, 18 to 24 months, is tucked up to very nice acquisitions. First Elder and then now Unichem. They've turned these acquisitions beautifully. You know, it's a company which has very strong momentum going forward. The only thing is that, you know, given the absence of choices in the market, you know, market has preempted a lot of the move and the stocks are no longer cheap. But structurally, I think, you know, a $200 million kind of a US base, a cash-throwing Indian market business, a deleveraging balance sheet, debt which they acquired on the back for Unichem acquisitions, all those things start falling in place and the company does move up the market cap pecking order. And I think the stock has done extremely well to reflect a lot of this optimism.
Okay. All right, Anmol, lots to chat about. So maybe we'll have another season just to take forward this conversation. But pleasure speaking with you. Thank you very much for joining in on the Medicine Box and to discuss all of your stocks as well as your thoughts on the pharmaceutical space. Thanks very much.
Thanks for having me, Ekta. Thanks. Look forward to another interaction.